Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 216 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're going to be talking about how much and what type of vegetables you want to grow for complete self-sufficiency. So we're going to talk about planning a self-sufficient vegetable garden and, you know, what sort of varieties you're going to want to grow and how many of them. Now, this is a vast topic, and it's the topic of today's show thanks to a listener email. Now, I will get to that shortly. Before I do, I just want to thank our latest Patreon, and that is Hannah Starrett. Thank you ever so much for becoming a patron. You actually became a patron during one of our live stream YouTube videos, and it was a real zinger. It was a real treat, a real surprise that happened, and I just want to thank you ever so much for your support of the show. It makes such a huge difference, and it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you so much. And if you would like to be like Hannah, then you can do so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. I also want to say that if you hang on to the end of this episode, I also have a listener question from the same listener that asked the question about the vegetable garden that was sent in as a voice message, which always excites me. So I'm going to deal with that at the end of today's show. So, Shannon Ward wrote in and writes, "Hi Carl, I've done some research on how many plants I'd need to grow in order to be more self-sufficient. Below is a list of what I've found. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether I need more or less. If there's already a podcast on this, let me know and I'll check it out." And then the list is basically titled, "Amount Needed for Two People for a Year of Consumption." And then there's a list of plants. I won't go through them all, but they are things like 12 tomato plants a year, 40 potato plants a year, 60 onions a year, 2 square meters of lettuce, and it goes on and on. And these lists are, you know, fantastic. They're a really great place to start. And what you've probably found, Shannon, while you were trying to compose that list, because, you know, not so long ago, I would have done exactly the same thing. And I was browsing online articles, trying to find a sort of a definitive list where you type in the number of people in your household, what sort of things you eat, and then they provide a complete list of what you want to grow. And the problem with it is kind of how you get there, and everybody's process is really, really different. And I'm aware at the outset that what you might not end up with at the end of this episode is a really, really satisfying answer to your question, as in it's probably not going to be a definitive list of what you need to grow, because the problem is it's more about a thought process, and I'm going to talk at great depth about that today. So the first thing to think about is that everybody is different. You know, everybody eats different food, and their, you know, households eat them in different ways. So what might be the right amount of beetroot for me and my family, who all absolutely love it and could eat it almost every meal, might be different to your family. There's those taste preferences, but I think we can probably deal with that. You know, what I'm thinking in my head is the idea of building an Excel spreadsheet where we put in a few inputs like number of people in our family and, you know, things like that, what we eat, what we like to eat, and it gives you that list. So I think I could build something like that given a bit of time, and that's quite an exciting project. So feel free to remind me of that project in the future if it disappears and doesn't get mentioned again, because it's something I'd enjoy doing. But what I'm getting at really is the things that would go into that spreadsheet, the things that we're going to enter in, are going to change what we do dramatically. Because it's one thing to say we're going to grow enough crops for us to eat, but it's another thing when we start thinking about how we eat. You know, when we want to be completely self-sufficient, are we talking about every single item of vegetable matter that passes our family's lips being one that we've grown ourselves in the garden? Do we sometimes buy ready meals? You know, are we talking about every single meal? Or are we talking about 5 meals a week or 2 meals a week? Are we talking about just the raw ingredients when we're making things like roast dinners? Or are we also going to be making all of our own pasta sauces and all of our own vegetable-based stocks and things like that? You know, there's a lot to think about, really, that kind of sets the bar at a different height. On top of that, and super, super critical now, is the idea of preserving. So are we planning on preserving whatever we need to make it so that our produce lasts through the years? And a great example of this is tomatoes. So are we going to be growing tomatoes that meet our needs throughout the summer and the tomato season? And obviously, now I know, Shannon, that you're in Australia, but you know, here in the UK, I can only really speak to my experience here. In a temperate climate, we can only grow tomatoes during the summer. So our yield per plant is going to be probably slightly different to yours. I know that you also get a winter there, and I'm not sure whether you get frosts or not, but you know, there's lots of places in the world where tomato plants will be perennials. In fact, that's where they come from originally, in the warmer parts of the Mediterranean. You know, they are perennial plants. So there's lots of variations based on where you live insofar as how many plants you're going to need. But beyond that, yeah, how are you going to preserve them? You know, are you going to preserve everything? So if we're only going to use tomatoes in the summer, then that would give us one answer. But if we're also going to grow enough of tomatoes to save and save to make lots and lots of tomato sauces, passatas, and all of our pasta bases and things like that, then we're going to need to grow a great deal more. So that's another part of the equation that goes into it. And you know, how much time are we going to have during the growing and harvesting season to do all of this preserving? You know, are we going to be growing plants that we're going to preserve in jams and things like that? Are we going to be drying? So I know that your list also covered things like strawberry plants. So, you know, if we're going to be self-sufficient in all these things, then we're going to need to do a tremendous amount of preserving. And we've started preserving already, even though it's midsummer here, it's June, and you know, a lot of our crops have only just started cropping, but we're already preserving. We're already freezing strawberry compote, we're already dehydrating strawberries, we're dehydrating lots and lots of different things. And you know, we started preserving even back in the spring when we were harvesting wild garlic and drying that. And my dehydrator will be running every week now right through until the winter, and we'll also be doing lots of other things, you know, freezing, making sauces and freezing those. We'll also be you know, preserving through putting things in honey, fermenting them. We'll be brining, and of course, on top of all those, we'll be making chutneys and jams. So, you know, there's a lot of preserving that can be done. And the next question to really ask yourself is, how seasonally are you prepared to eat? You know, are you prepared for your diet to reduce down to 5 or 6 vegetables in the winter months? Or, you know, do you want more variety in your diet? Because if we're prepared to eat more seasonally, then we certainly would produce a lot more of those winter vegetables, which is a good thing. I think it fits quite well into the idea of being self-sufficient, because we've got all of that garden space, and through the summer we might be growing 30 or 40 different varieties of things, whereas during the winter and spring, the things that are growing for cropping, we're probably down to about 10 or 12 different varieties of things, you know. So through the winter and spring, we're going to be harvesting leeks and swedes, purple sprouting broccoli, kale, chard, and you know, one or two other things, but that's about it. Whereas in the summer, you know, we've got all of those things along with an absolute smorgasbord of choice and variety. So we're going to be growing less of those things because we don't, you know, we can use that same space for both seasons. Cabbages are another thing that we can grow all year round. So if you're prepared to eat seasonally, then we are definitely, you know, going to make it a lot easier on ourselves. These are all questions that every family will have to answer. And, you know, in our family, there's a definite difference between all of our family members. I enjoy everything. I can eat everything and really, really enjoy it if it's well prepared. Whereas my wife's palate is a little bit smaller, you know, there's lots of things that she won't enjoy eating. And then, of course, we have three children, and I don't know any children who will genuinely enjoy eating absolutely anything like I do. So, you know, it depends on the makeup of your family as well. So I know it sounds like a bit of a fudge, but these really are critical questions that need to be answered to then go into the idea of, right, what should I then grow? So once you've answered these questions and you've worked them out, then these questions are then going to flavour every other decision that you make, you know, particularly the preserving. So it's very easy to sit down and think, well, I want to eat, you know, one meal a day with a choice of these vegetables and maybe one meal a day with a choice of these vegetables, you know, salads and things. But then you think, well, in the winter, are you going to be eating any salads? Because here in the UK, we're not able to grow any lettuce or anything like that in the coldest months. So in January and February, the chances of me harvesting any lettuce at all are really, really slim, unless I were to have a heated greenhouse or some other kind of space. I suppose I could grow some cut and come again lettuce on our windowsills. So, you know, there are solutions to a lot of these problems, but they are problems nonetheless that need addressing. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So once you've answered all those questions, I think then you're in a position to look at how many of each plant you want to grow. And I would literally break it down into meal ideas and meal planning. And I would work backwards from there. And I think what I would probably do is I would create a weekly meal plan. And you don't need to stick to this, obviously, but it's going to give you a really good idea. I would create a weekly meal plan for each of the seasons. I would create one for winter, one for spring, one for summer, and one for autumn. And then what I would do is I would start with the easy pickings. So I would start with autumn and summer, when we're going to have most of our crops harvesting out the ground. And I would literally create a weekly meal plan there and work out what goes into it. So for example, for summer, I would have 7 days worth of meals. Let's say we're not going to eat any fruit and vegetables for our breakfast for now. We're going to use cereal crops or what have you. And of course, again, this is another example of how it will change per family. So for me, I eat two meals a day. That's what I do. So that's why I'm coming at it from the two meals a day idea. But my children eat breakfast, and generally their breakfast cereals will be, you know, shop bought, and you know, there's no requirement for me to meet a demand there with our fruit and vegetables. But again, it's going to depend on your family. Now, we certainly have the occasional sort of eggs on toast kind of thing and things like that for breakfast, but again, these aren't things that I'm going to be having a demand that I need to meet from my vegetable garden. So I'm going to go with two meals a day per person, and I'm literally going to write out a 7 day meal plan. And I'm thinking in summer we're going to have, you know, vegetables that are cooked for maybe, and you can break it down really simply like this, for maybe sort of two meals a day, 3 days a week. So that gives us 8 meals. Then we're going to have them for one meal a day for 2 days a week. It gives us another 2. So we're up to 10 meals, and just break it down like that. You know, how many of your meals are going to be with salads? And then you could add it like that. How many of your meals are going to be like a pasta, and you're getting your vegetables through the sauce that you're making with maybe beans and tomatoes? And break it down, you know, meal by meal, and work out a weekly plan, and then work out how many of those vegetables you're going to need per week. And then calculate that, times it by however many weeks are in a season. So what have we got? Roughly 3, so 12 weeks, something like that. So we've got 12 weeks times 4, that gives us 48 weeks. So call it 13 weeks per season. So you want 13 weeks worth of all of your summer meal vegetables. Then you do autumn, and again, you might think slightly differently because I'm harvesting slightly different things in the autumn. So you might include some squash in there that you weren't harvesting in the summer. You might have things like asparagus in your summer meal plan that doesn't make it into your autumn meal plan. And, you know, the same would apply in spring. In spring, you would have things like broad beans and asparagus definitely in your meal plan, but you wouldn't have that many of your main crop vegetables. So in spring, you're going to be thinking about mostly, or a lot of it is things that you're going to be able to preserve. So in your spring meal planning are going to be a lot of your overwintered vegetables like swedes, but also a lot of things that are really easy to preserve, like your squashes and your pumpkins. And then your winter meal plan would include a lot of the things that we can harvest right through the winter. So leeks, chard, kale, all of those kinds of things are going to make our winter meal planning. Then we have on top of that are other things, and things that don't necessarily make it onto our thought process when we're planning a meal, but things like garlic, things like onions. Go through your meal plan again and work out how many of these meals require these items and in what number. And from there, you know, extrapolate out. And then what you'll end up with is a number of plants or a number of yield that you'll need from each of these plants to get you through the year. Now, the next step is to, again, look at it seasonally and think, right, so if I'm producing this many crops, when are they going to be ready and when am I looking to eat them? Because you might be looking at doing an awful lot of preserving. And this sounds like a really complicated method, and if you really want to do it, and I strongly recommend it, it's a fantastic exercise, really enjoyable and really, really informative. But if you really want to do it, I do recommend that maybe you listen to this episode more than once and sort of go through the process one step at a time and really do think about it, because you're going to learn an awful lot about what you actually want to grow and what you should grow. And, you know, for example, and also what you're going to want to preserve. And it's going to make it so much easier for you to plan around the preserving of those things. For example, if like my family, you really, really enjoy beetroot, then, you know, you're only going to be harvesting them for, if you're really lucky, maybe 4 or 5 months of the year. So how are you going to preserve them? And everyone's different. We're definitely not going to be pickling them in vinegar or anything like that, but we are going to come up with lots of ways that we can preserve them this winter. And, you know, one way of doing that, you might end up blanching and freezing a lot of vegetables. That's a great way of preserving. It's a great way of preserving things like beans. And if you're going to do that, then how much freezer space are you going to need? So these are all knock-on questions that come out of the original thought process. And it's a highly worthwhile job to do, I think. So I apologize that doesn't really give you the really satisfying answer to the question, which would be a list of vegetables. But there are just too many variables, unfortunately. But and I think that's why, you know, it's really difficult to find a website or anything like that where it gives you the answers, because there's too many variables based on where you live, based on your seasons, based on what you enjoy eating, based on the makeup of your family, based on your willingness and ability to preserve. There's, you know, far too many questions that need answering before you can answer the big one. So hopefully you've all found that useful. I know that I wish someone had told me this 3 years ago, because I would have, you know, really grasped that with both hands and sat down and started doing it. And I think it would have made quite a big difference in my first couple of years, because this is really where I am now. Where I am now, I get a feel for what we're doing, and I feel like I can answer these questions myself fairly easily, and I could come up with a plan. But I couldn't have done it 2 years ago because I didn't know what questions to ask. So if you do go ahead and make yourself a little plan, I'd love it if you shared your results. Show us your little chart of, you know, how many vegetables you would need to grow to be self-sufficient. Share it on the Facebook group and we can all compare notes. I'd absolutely love that. So that brings an end to that discussion. The only other thing to add, actually, is that the other thing to bear in mind is that it's an iterative process. So even when you come up with your plan and you instigate it, you'll find year one, there are things that you just want more of that you didn't have enough of. And you'll find that you have things that you didn't really get through in the winter that you thought you might. And, you know, you'll have to juggle it over the coming years. We certainly did. You know, I know that spinach and chard are two things we need to grow less of than we used to. And same with kale. And, you know, things like beetroot, we're now growing a lot more than we used to. And the same with potatoes. So you will come to an answer through an iterative process over a number of seasons. And, you know, enjoying the process should be part of what we do, because otherwise it makes it very, very difficult indeed. So enjoy the process. And like I say, share your results. I'd love to see them. So that brings to a close that part of the episode. And I'm just now going to play that voice message.
Hi, Carl. Shannon Ward here from very cold and wet South Australia at the moment. I just want to thank you again for all your content that you release and all the support you've given me. I just have a question. I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but obviously you're really into ripe mushrooms. I was just wondering if there was a mushroom species that's sort of exclusive to Australia that you wanted to try or sort of interested in. Maybe you could do a bit of research if you haven't thought about it. Yeah, cool. Looking forward to hearing your answer.
Well, Shannon, I did have to do some research for sure, but I've come up with an answer, and it would be the straw mushroom, which is, its Latin name is Volvariella volvacea, I believe, and it's basically a species of edible mushroom that is cultivated all through Southeast Australia and Asia, sorry. I meant Southeast Asia, but also East Asia, but also is grown in the wild in Australia. And it's used extensively in Asian cuisines, and you can buy them cultivated, you can cultivate them yourself. But one of the reasons I'm attracted to them is because they don't grow here in the UK. And the second one is because there is a deadly lookalike that you need to be a bit of a mushroom expert to even tell it apart from. And, you know, that's why I'd love to try it, because I don't think I'm ever going to be in a position where I'm somewhere in the world that it grows and I have the ability to forage for it and tell it apart. So to have the opportunity to try it would probably be a once in a lifetime opportunity. So there you go. There's my answer. Thanks for the question. It was awesome. And I really appreciate you sending in a voice question. Anyone else who wants to do it, the link's in the show notes. It's super simple. And I always absolutely love getting them. I sort of give a little jump for joy every time I get a voice message. They are a real treat to receive. So that's going to wrap today's episode up. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I will speak to you guys next week. Cheers.
If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.